everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kaiju Carnage. I am your host, Cal the Kaiju Guy. So, good morning, everyone. At the time of this recording, anyway, good morning on this fine Saturday morning. It's nice and muggy and misty and dreary outside. Cooled down a pretty good bit. You know, the past week, it's, this wonderful Louisiana weather. It goes up and down and all that. It's nothing for Louisianians to experience all four seasons, sometimes in a matter of like 2 or 3 days, sometimes the same day, believe it or not. I can remember a time not very long ago, like waking up and it was extremely hot. I remember being at work and like sweating and having to drink lots of water and all that stuff. And then this real big rain shower came and drenched everything. And then, it started to cool down. So, like, it was nice and breezy and all that stuff. And then by that night, it was, 29 degrees. So, and all that happened in one day. So, the weather down here can be pretty crazy. But before I jump into today's episode, I forgot to talk about something this past Wednesday that I said that I was going to. Started this thing where I was like, hey, are you an artist? Like, I'm going to give you some details and all that this Wednesday and all that on what I want to do. But then Wednesday rolled around, and you know, on Wednesdays I go to work that day and I get off at 5, and it's about, with very minimal traffic, it's a 35-minute drive from work to home. And then I got to get here, I got to let the dogs out, I've got to, you know, do a few things. So half the time I don't actually sit down to start recording until 6:30 or 7 o'clock or something like that. And by then Emily's home, and you know, she was like, she wasn't being rude about it or anything, but it's, you know, like I was tired, it was late, I was hungry. She was basically like, hurry up and record that thing so that, you know, we can do dinner and all that stuff. So I completely spaced on talking about it. So it's going to be first thing that I'm talking about today. So my thing that I was going to do was, are you an artist? To any of my listeners and all of that. And if you are, and if you seem interested in what I'm going to suggest, then just message me on whatever social media platform you prefer to use. But I'm on the hunt, I'm in the market for a new logo for the podcast. Now, at one point in time, I had talked to Matt Frank, a kaiju artist. You know, I had messaged him about potentially doing the artwork, and he sent me the links and everything that I needed to you know, get with his scheduler and all of that kind of stuff. But the more I got to thinking about it, the more, especially in this day and age, now that AI art is starting to really run amok with, you know, a lot of stuff, smaller artists that are trying to get commissions and things like that are, you know, they're having a hard time trying to stand out and all of that. And while I love the art of Matt Frank, and I was there for a while very dead set on, oh man, this will be pretty cool to have my podcast logo feature the artwork of Matt Frank, the more I got to thinking about it, the more I was like, you know, I think I really need to give a smaller artist, a lesser known artist, the opportunity to do this. So that's why I'm doing this right now. I'm in the market for a new logo. I like the logo that I currently have. Just, you know, whenever I first created this podcast, I was kind of, I'm not the most technologically sound guy that there is. You know, I'm a pretty stereotypical 35-year-old redneck, you know, in which You know, I can do the basics, but as far as like any kind of designing or anything like that, I'm very, you know what I mean? And so whenever I was starting up the podcast and all of that, I was like, man, I need me a logo. And so I just went to some generic site and it's like, what's the name of your business or whatever? And I typed it in and it's like, okay, here's the font patterns and you can enlarge it or make it smaller. Here's the colors that you can use. And so I picked the font that I did and chose red and blue as my colors. And I want to stick with the red and blue as my colors because red and blue are my two favorite colors. And so I want to stick with that. But it just doesn't, you know, at the time when you're just throwing something together, it worked. And it was something that I was very proud of, and I'm still very proud of it. Don't get me wrong. I've got a mug, a coffee mug. I'm actually drinking out of it this morning. I've got a cup of coffee sitting next to me in the mug where it has the Kaiju Carnage logo on it, and I have a ball cap that I ordered off of Amazon that has the Kaiju Carnage logo on it. So I've got some merch. You know, it's not available to the public, although if anybody ever wants, if you want a mug or a hat or something like that, just reach out to me and I'll see about getting one made and then shipping it to you. You know, no big deal. But so I'm proud of the logo that I have. Don't get me wrong, no matter how simple it may be. But I look at these other podcasts and I look at these other YouTube channels and all of that kind of stuff, and their logos, you know, it's not just words or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I have a design in mind that I want. It's kind of, you know, to be like a silhouette kind of thing, to where like it'll be my logo. And you know, if you're interested in doing this, we will discuss like how I want the logo to look like, you know, because I'm gonna want the font to change a little bit. I'm gonna want it to look a tad bit more monstrous, if you will. And I want to have the silhouettes of two kaiju heads like facing away from one another, like they're both roaring or something like that. Kind of picture whenever at the end of Godzilla vs. Kong, whenever Godzilla is in Kong's face and he's roaring, and then Kong roars back at him. Picture it instead of being down at that laying down angle like that, it's more even. And instead of roaring at each other, I want them roaring away from one another. And that's pretty much what I want. And I want it to be silhouette. And I haven't decided if I want there to be eyes or anything, but that's pretty much what I want. And, you know, I haven't really thought about a lot of the smaller fine details of it and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, like, you know, I'm gonna be honest with you guys. If you're interested in this and you decide to, you know, to do this and all of that kind of stuff, like, I'm going to give you credit. I am. Don't get me wrong. I'm gonna give you credit. But at the same time, I'm treating this as if it is a, like, made to purchase commission. So I know a lot of people, there's a lot of people that's like, you know, well, if they do this commission or something like that, that, you know, if you do anything with the image, like they get some type of royalties and stuff like that. I'm not, you know, it's not me trying to take money out of your pocket or anything, but I mean, the purpose of this logo, like, I don't make money off of this. You know what I mean? Like, I do not make a dime out of this, although I'm thinking about doing something as far as like sponsors go. Yet again, because I'll get to that in a second. I'll get to that in a second. But I don't make money on this. Like, this is from the beginning has been nothing more than a hobby for me. I do not make a dime off of anything that I do. And so it would be very difficult for me to, you know, if I do this commission, get the artwork, and then anytime I go to do something with the artwork, the artist that did it is like, oh, well, I get you have to pay me to use that image. I'm not going to be able to do that. I can't. If I was larger and I was actually bringing in money, that would be a different story. we would be able to work something out. But in the meantime, I cannot pull that off. And so this will be a made-to-purchase commission that I'm wanting to do. That once we work together on this project or whatever, I let you know what I want. And, you know, you might do a few drafts of it and send it to me. And I might be like, can you make this a little tighter? Can you make that a little, you know, something like we're going to work together on things and all of that kind of stuff. And if you have, say, if you're just a sketch artist and you have someone who does your inks and your colorings or things like that, or maybe if you're just strictly digital and you do everything on your own, you know, that's your prerogative and all of that. But we will be working together. And once it is done, I will purchase said image from you. Now, you know, again, at the same time, I'm not just trying to take money out of your pocket, but let's be reasonable here. You know what I mean? Because I've shopped around before for artists and before settling on Matt Frank and all of that kind of stuff, and was just like, hey, you know, I'm in the thing for looking at for a new logo and this and that and all that kind of stuff. Like, can you help me out? Like, what's your rates and all that kind of stuff? And well, first I was asked, like, do you do commissions? And they're like, oh yeah, I do commissions. And so I'm like, okay, well, what's your price for commissions? Because some artists do, like, well, it depends on how many characters you want or something like that. Like, if you're going to want 3 characters in it, I'm going to charge like $40 per character. So that'll be like $120. Or there's some people that's like, oh, you know, I just do a flat rate. Like, it's just a simple commission or whatever, depending on how the complexity of it and everything. Like, if it's at this tier level, I'm only going to charge you, you know, $50 or $80 or something like that, you know. But there were some people that was just way too proud of themselves. I'm not going to lie. They were way too proud of themselves. I looked at their portfolio, saw what they were able to do and everything, and then I reach out to them and like, hey, you know, I'm in the market for a new logo. This is kind of what I want. Like, do you think you'll be able to help me out? And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, for what you want and how you want it designed and this and that and everything, oh, that's going to be $300. And I'm like, have you lost your mind? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I get that this is your job and that you're trying to make money, but I mean, come on now. Like, there's big name artists out there that don't charge that much for commissions. And like, I've never even heard of you and you're wanting to charge this much for that. Like, no. So sorry if that comes off as me being rude, but I mean, it's just, you know, I'm a firm believer in I'm going to pay somebody what I believe the job is worth for. And, like, there's just some people out there. I have a friend that does artwork, and she painted this very beautiful, painting for me. That's like a 18 inch by like 24 inch. And it's like an owl that's like flying through, the trees. It's at nighttime, very Tim Burton kind of esque looking. You could tell she put a lot of work and effort into it. It's a very nice piece of artwork and all of that kind of stuff. And she did a custom-made frame, and she put, like, the cycles of the moon all around the frame and all of that kind of stuff, and charged me $100. You know, and I'm like, that seems reasonable. Sure, okay, I'll pay $100 for that. It's a big old giant piece of artwork, you know what I mean? Like, it's absolutely worth that. But then to have somebody just like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm gonna do your logo for you and all that kind of stuff. It shouldn't take me long. I'll be done with it, you know, in probably 2 hours or something like that. So that's going to be $300. And I'm like, no, sorry. I can't go with that. You know what I mean? So we'll work something out. And if you don't want payment, if you just want shout outs or something like that, or if you want, you know, I'm willing to make a deal with you. If, you know, I can put on the artwork, like with the logo on all of my social medias and everything, I can put like a watermark or something like that underneath it saying like, this is who you are, like, whatever, you know, I don't know, I'm just going to throw something out there, Kaiju Monster Designs, or something like that, you know, and, like, it'll be underneath the logo and all that kind of stuff, so that anybody that visits my social media pages or my YouTube or anything like that, once they see the artwork, and they're like, oh, that's cool artwork, your name will be directly under it, so that people will be like, oh, okay, I like that artwork, and that's the individual that did my artwork, let me go check them out. Or something like that, you know. I can put your links and stuff on all of my social medias and all of that kind of stuff. Like, you know, I mean, we'll work something out. But that's basically what I'm wanting to do. So if you are an artist and you're interested in wanting to have your artwork featured officially as part of my podcast and all that kind of stuff, and you're willing to deal with me somewhat being a perfectionist, and, you know, if you're submitting things to me and I'm like, can you change this a little bit, or can you change that a little bit? I don't want you to think I'm just going to be nitpicky and all that kind of stuff. Let's be honest here. I'm very easy to please. I know I just said I'm kind of a perfectionist, but also I'm very easy to please. Like, I have an idea in my head of what I want, and 9 times out of 10, if somebody's going to send me something and it's like, it's pretty much what I've asked for, like, hey, no, that's good. That's awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it. We'll go with that. And, yeah, that's pretty much what I want to do. And because eventually, you know, I do want to get to the point where I can potentially make money off of this podcast. Maybe not necessarily in the way of just doing ads and sponsors and things like that, because I really don't want to mess with that. I believe that ads just really take away when you're in the middle of an episode and then all of a sudden it's like, boom, here's an ad, you know, just stops everything and all that kind of stuff. Like, I just don't want to, you know what I mean? Like, it just, I just don't like ads, but, yeah, I just feel it's not fair to my listeners that are sitting here tuning in and listening to the show and all of that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden they're interrupted for a minute, just for some ad, you know what I mean? Like, even though it would be a way for me to make money. And speaking of which, I'm thinking about restarting the ads, like the sponsorships. You remember there for a while I had them on and then I didn't like it. Like I just said, I don't like ads being in the show and all that kind of stuff, but there's one problem. I got on my Anchor app and there was an update and it's showing like more new sponsors have started to reach out to me to talk about certain products and things like that in the show, and I'll get paid for like every 1,000 listens and all of that kind of stuff. But the last time that I did ads, it did generate some money. I do have a little bit of money in the Anchor app and all of that kind of stuff. And so I was like, well, let me go ahead and cash out. Let me go ahead and get that out of there. So, you know, just to put it into my bank account and all of that. There's just one little itty bitty problem. I didn't generate enough to be able to cash out. It's one of those things where it's like, hey, you need at least $50 in here before you can cash out kind of thing. And you're only at such and such amount. So the money is just sitting there in the app. And so it's one of those deals where it's like, okay, maybe I'll reactivate everything temporarily just to get past that threshold to where I can pull it out. And then once I pull it out, I'll deactivate the ads again. It's something that I'm just thinking about, like I said. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt and all that. And, you know, eventually, like I said, I do want to, it would be cool for me to be able to make money off of this, you know, like I could add, like having a more legit logo and stuff like that. Like I could plaster it on t-shirts or hats or mugs, you know, cups, things like that, and just put it on my website, make it to where it's like a made to order kind of thing. And if anybody wants one, you know, you just, you know, you can just order one and I'll get it made for you and I'll ship it to you. Simple as that. You know, I think it would be really cool to get to the point to where I could start to make money off of this. And, you know, I've told you guys before that I am a writer and I have many, 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 many ideas, kaiju related ideas that I could write in like collections of short stories. I already have a way to be able to put, if I do throw together a collection of short stories, I can put them on Amazon and they'll be available for anybody to be able to order, and Amazon will take care of the ordering and all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's just stuff that I'm looking at. You know, I've been doing this long enough to where it's like, you know, like this could become a potential something for me to make money off of. And now that I'm really, really, really taking off, starting to take off more on YouTube, I'm very close to 50,000 total views on YouTube. And I have, about 185 subscribers, You know, like it, you know, obviously you can make money on YouTube doing this stuff, and I'm really kind of getting to the point to where I'm going to start trying to publish the podcast episodes on YouTube and all of that. So, you know, I'm just looking at different ways. And one thing that I want to do is to have a more official slash professional looking podcast. I mean, not podcast, logo. That's just something that I'm looking at. So it is what it is. But okay, guys, I rambled on about all that long enough, but I wanted to talk about it Wednesday, but like I said, I just completely spaced and forgot. So on today's episode, I'm doing a spotlight on an individual that I am a diehard supporter of, and that is Willis O'Brien. Now, you guys have heard me say before that in a lot of ways, Ray Harryhausen is called and considered the grandfather of special effects. Well, if he is the grandfather of special effects, Willis O'Brien is the great grandfather of special effects. I've been Team Willis O'Brien for many, many years, and I'm a firm believer that he does not get the credit that he deserves with his contributions to the overall film industry, as well as with special effects. Now, don't get me wrong, I love Ray Harryhausen. You guys know I do. I dedicated an entire month of this podcast to the works of Ray Harryhausen. You guys know that I love Ray Harryhausen, but I also love Willis O'Brien, and I do believe that it's very wrong that so many people just completely overlook him. They pay no mind to him. Like, maybe some of them have heard the name, but they don't give him the credit that he deserves. Like, a lot of times he's just kind of mentioned in passing and all of that. Like, you know, give you a few examples, not just with Willis O'Brien and Ray Harryhausen, but it happens. You know, let's look at Marvel Comics for a minute. For the vast majority of Marvel Comics, like, Stan Lee gets the vast majority of the credit. And, like, oh, he was the creator of the Marvel Universe and everything. No, he was not. Many of the characters that he came up with and all of that, or that are big named famous characters and all that kind of stuff, is like, Stan Lee created this character, you know, and all that kind of stuff. No, he did not. There is so much about the Marvel Universe in Marvel Comics that was either, it's either flat out credit is given to Stan Lee that he doesn't even deserve, or he co-created it with an individual by the name of Jack Kirby. Now, more diehard comic book fans will know who Jack Kirby is. Jack Kirby is responsible, after he left Marvel at one point, you know, he went over to DC. He created, you know, all the stuff concerning, like, the New Gods, like Darkseid, the Planet Apocalypse, like, and all of that kind of stuff. He's the reason all of that came about in DC Comics. Like, he's Jack Kirby is a big, big name contributor in the comic book industry. But because whenever he was up and coming and Stan Lee was a bigger name and he was more of the face of Marvel and everything, Stan Lee gets vast majority of the credit. Like, even though Jack Kirby, like, very much had his hand in creating just as much, sometimes even more, than Stan Lee did. And it's caused me to kind of be like an anti-Stan Lee kind of guy and everything like that. Because, no, you know, a lot of times you shouldn't blame somebody for, you know, receiving credit and all of that kind of stuff from the masses. But the thing that's always sat wrong with me is that in so many interviews and anytime people would be talking to Stan Lee or, you know, at comic conventions and things like that, and they would say things like, oh, you know, this guy, he's the creator of the Marvel Universe. He's the creator of so many of our favorite characters and all that. He would just sit there and nod and smile. Would not be like, oh, well, you know, me and Jack Kirby has actually created this. Or that was actually Jack Kirby's idea, and he gave me the designs, and I'm the one that executed it and things like that. So even he himself would not give Jack Kirby the credit and all of that. And so, like, it just, it doesn't sit well with me. Now, it's not quite like that with Ray Harryhausen and Willis O'Brien. Because Ray Harryhausen would be one of the first individuals to talk up Willis O'Brien and say, he taught me this and he taught me that. He was the master. I was the student and all of that kind of stuff. Like, he absolutely gave credit. But it's also one of those deals to where it's like you look around and you see like, oh, well, here's a new Ray Harryhausen book that's being released of his sketches that's never been released before. And then it'll be like, here's another book that's being released on the works of Ray Harryhausen or the life of Ray Harryhausen. And then here's a new documentary that's coming out, the career of Ray Harryhausen and all of that kind of stuff. And in all of these things, like from these other authors or people who made the documentaries and stuff, they will mention Willis O'Brien, but then it's just kind of like in passing. And it's like, where's the stuff on Willis O'Brien? Where is the stuff on the man that taught Ray Harryhausen what to do and how to do it and all of that kind of stuff? Like, you know, Ray Harryhausen is absolutely one of the cases of the student absolutely outshines the master, because Ray Harryhausen just casts a massive shadow over the industry. But it's never sat right with me that Willis O'Brien just does not get the credit that he deserves. And so I'm here today, at least, to talk about Willis O'Brien and talk about his contributions to the movie industry, and not just in the movie industry, but to the dinosaur film genre, to the giant monster film genre, and all of that kind of stuff. Because if it was not for him working on many of these older silent films during the silent film era and all of that, who knows where things would have gone and all of that, you know? No matter what anybody wants to say about Ray Harryhausen being the best stop-motion animator that there is, and believe me, I believe that he was. I love Ray Harryhausen. But keep in mind, Ray Harryhausen, one of the reasons he decided to get into filmmaking and start messing with stop-motion animation was because he went to go see King Kong in theaters and fell in love with the animation that was done by Willis O'Brien. So, you know, it's one of those things to where, like, Willis O'Brien has left his stamp on the industry, but hardly nobody talks about it. Well, we're going to talk about it today, I can tell you that. So, let's get started. Ray Harryhausen was born March 2nd. He just had his birthday not too long ago, just a few days ago. March 2nd, 1886, and he died November 8th, 1962. He was born in California, Oakland, California, I believe, and, like, you know, had a pretty standard childhood up until a very early age. I'd say somewhere between 11, 12 years old or something like that. He left home to go to work. It was a different time back then, people. You know, like, if he was born in 1886, so he left to go to work, it was like 1897 or 98 or something like that. Still not even in the 1900s yet. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine today, like, you know, for you parents that listen to the show and you have kids or anything like that, and you got a kid that's like, you know, 12 years old or something like that, and he just walks up to you one day, or she just walks up to you one day, and is like, hey, Ma, hey, Dad, how y'all doing? Got a job. I gotta leave. You know, bye. You know, you're going to be like, what in the world? Like, you're not even a teenager yet, and you're already leaving the house? Like, come on now. But yeah, that's just how it was back then. So he left to go to work, and he primarily did work on cattle ranches. He was a cowboy. He was a farmhand. Worked as a fur trapper. He was a bartender at one point, and he was also a rodeo competitor. He pretty much really started getting interested in dinosaurs, because in the area that he lived, he also semi-worked as a tour guide, and he would do guides for paleontologists going out to, you know, and they would be talking about, like, well, the dinosaurs of this area used to roam here, and they used to roam there, and, you know, there's some fossils that could be right here and all that. And doing that, that's whenever he really started getting interested in dinosaurs, but he didn't start really doing anything with that interest quite yet. And after he decided he was done with all of that kind of stuff, you know, he goes to San Francisco and he ends up becoming a draftsman in architecture. Had a number of jobs, like, after that. He became a sports cartoonist for a little while for the San Francisco Daily News. He was a pro boxer, believe it or not. He started a boxing career, and his official record is 9-1. He lost his final fight, and that's why he retired. I don't know if it was just because he, you know, some fighters are like that. You know, they'll go years and years and years and fight after fight after fight after fight, not losing. And then the moment they get that first loss on their record, it's like it takes all the wind out of their sails and they want to leave. Looking at you, Ronda Rousey. You know, when people used to talk about how she was the most dominant female athlete of all time, I think by ESPN one time she was voted as the single most dominant athlete, like, of all time. It was a freaking joke. Like, and anyone who pays a whole lot of attention to combat sports and has martial arts experience would look at the Ronda Rousey fad and basically be like, this is going to end eventually. Because she was good, I'm not going to lie, but she was good in comparison to the lesser skilled fighters around her. So it made her look so much better. And I remember I would tell all of my friends that also pay attention to combat sports. I'm not going to mention any names, but there was one in particular that he and I have had many an argument over back in the day, where I would openly say, the moment Ronda Rousey steps into a ring with somebody that's at her skill level, she's going to get wrecked. And whenever she stepped into the ring with Holly Holm, Holly Holm about kicked her head off. And then she was making her big return, her big comeback, and all that kind of stuff against Amanda Nunes. I called it again. Nunes is going to wreck her. And she ended up losing twice and then went off into the sunset, and she's never had anything to do with combat sports since. And then she goes over to the pro wrestling circuit in WWE, and the crowd hates her over there just as much as the crowd hated her in martial arts and all that. But, you know, I digress. Let me just move on from all that. I could do multiple episodes about talking about my massive disdain for Ronda Rousey. But anywho, that's pretty much what happened to Willis O'Brien, that won his first 9 fights and then had his 10th fight and he lost. And I'm not saying that's exactly what happened to him, but it is possible that that's what happened. You know, he got his first loss, and, you know, could have possibly taken the wind out of his sails, and he's like, eh, you know, okay, maybe this isn't for me, and he went away. And so, not long after that, he started working on the railroad. He was also a sculptor for marble, like, sculpts and things like that. Did that for a little while, and then he became an assistant to the head architect for the San Francisco World's Fair. And it was around this time that he started working on models. Like, just started making little model dinosaurs and stuff like that. And initially, he made them out of clay. They were just simple clay little, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of stuff to them. There may have been some wires or something like that in there to where they were able to bend and the clay would just simply move with them and all of that. But nothing too complex or anything, and I'll get into all that later on. But while he was working on models, there was an individual by the name of Herman Wobber. And Willis O'Brien had made a 90-second animation of some of his dinosaurs. And this individual, Herman Wobber, saw the animation, liked it, and put out a commission for a film called The Dinosaur and the Missing Link, A Prehistoric Tragedy. This film came out in 1915, had a $5,000 budget, which, for those of you that are interested, you know that I like to do this and everything. Back in 1915, $5,000 was the equivalent of six figures nowadays. So, there's that. Over, you know, with inflation going over, you know, 108 years from 1915 to 2023. And after that, he pretty much worked on a number of different films. He did 10,000 BC, he did Prehistoric Poultry, Puzzling, Billboard, Nippy's Nightmare, and all that, which Puzzling Billboard and Nippy's Nightmare were the first two films to ever combine live action and stop motion animation. Now, there was another individual, and this is whenever the bad luck that would end up following Willis O'Brien for the vast majority of his professional career would begin. Because I think a lot of the reason why a lot of people don't put him in the same category as Ray Harryhausen is because Ray Harryhausen kept giving work. And, you know, he would be able to do his own films. They became very well known, very renowned, and all of that. And it spanned decades, unfortunately, and I'm going to cover all that in this episode. Willis O'Brien kept, like, he would get attached to a project, and then the project would fall through. And it had nothing to do with him. It would be like, you know, the studio would just contact him. Hey, we're making a movie about dinosaurs. We want you to be the animator. And so he was like, okay. And he would spend months and months and months working on the animation for this film. And then one day he gets contacted. It's like, ah, well, funding fell through, so we're not doing the movie anymore. Thanks for all your contributions. Bye-bye. And that's it. Now he's back at square one trying to find another movie to go work on. And that happened to him a lot. And not only did that happen to him a lot, but you're about to experience something else that happened to him. There was an individual by the name of Herbert Dawley. And he did a commission for him, like pretty much hired Willis O'Brien and was like, we're going to do a movie called Ghost of Slumber Mountain. And the budget for the film was going to be $3,000. Again, back then, $3,000 was the equivalent of nearly $89,000 by today's standards and all of that. It was a 45-minute film, but after the 45-minute film was done and given to Mr. Herbert, he cut the 45-minute film down to 11 minutes and then essentially turned around and took all the credit. Didn't hardly mention Willis O'Brien, and a lot of the footage that he didn't use for this film, it was used in the sequel to this film and all of that, and Willis O'Brien did not get compensated hardly at all for his works on that film. And so, you see, that's the beginning of, like, the bad luck that is starting to follow him. But, you know, the film ended up grossing $100,000. And like I said, Willis O'Brien got very little to nothing out of that. But in 1925, that film caught the attention of an individual by the name of Marcel Delgado. And, I'm sorry, not Marcel Delgado. I got ahead of myself. I apologize. It caught the attention of the people that would end up working on the film The Lost World. They wanted to know who the animator is. They found out who the animator was, and they said, hey, we want you to be a part of this movie where we're going to do stop-motion dinosaurs and stuff like that. So they hired Willis O'Brien. Now, here's where Marcel Delgado gets involved and all of that, because like I said, up until this point, Willis O'Brien had pretty much just been using clay models and stuff like that. Marcel Delgado helped create newer, more complex models in which the outside would be rubber as opposed to clay, and that there were actual little armatures inside, kind of like a little metal skeleton. And like that's whenever that started happening with these little armatures and all that, and the animation started looking a lot better and all of that. I've seen clips. I own this particular version of The Lost World. I own it on Blu-ray. And I've seen clips of it. I've never actually sat down and watched it all the way through. I kind of have to be in a certain mindset to watch like an old, like, you know, like early 1900s film and all of that. And I just haven't been in the mood lately. So, but I'll get there eventually, trust me, because I'm going to cover the film on this podcast eventually. And The Lost World is a Willis O'Brien was a pioneer for this film. There's a lot of things that, like, we know and love today in modern filmmaking that Willis O'Brien did in The Lost World. So The Lost World is very much a necessary film, like, that needs to be, like, kept up with. And, you know, like, I can't think of the terminology that I'm wanting to use. Like, but yeah, like, it's a very well-known film, very important film, and all that stuff. And Willis O'Brien is the one that did the stop-motion animation for that. Now, in the same year that he did that movie, O'Brien got married to an individual by the name of Hazel Collette. And it wasn't a good marriage. They had two children out of the marriage, but the marriage only lasted for 5 years. They were divorced in 1930. There's a rumor that Willis O'Brien was forced into the marriage. It was just one of those deals. You know, it was different back then. You know, one of those deals to where, like, oh, well, my family knows her family pretty good, so let's join up these families and have these two individuals get married. Willis O'Brien turned to alcohol during the marriage and all of that. You know, it wasn't good, and ended up having two kids, and then one child was named William, the other was Willis Jr. And like I said, they were divorced in 1930, but in 1931, Hazel ended up getting diagnosed with cancer as well as tuberculosis. To make matters a little bit worse, William also ended up getting tuberculosis, went blind in one eye, and then eventually went blind in the other eye. And after the divorce, the two children went to go stay with their mother permanently, though Willis O'Brien did remain close with the children and would go see them frequently, and they would also come visit him frequently. And then here was the time where, you know, like I said, his bad luck is just following him around. He would get attached to projects. Like, he went to do a project for Frankenstein, went to do a project for Atlantis, both of which fell through and were canceled. Then, possibly, the most important film of his career, because it set him on a path to get to the next film that he would work on would be even more important, the film Creation, that would end up being unfinished because it also got dropped. Now, I'm not going to talk a whole lot about this next part because I cover a lot of stuff about Creation and what it ended up becoming and all of that in my original episode, The OGs of Kaiju Part 1, King Kong. So I'm not going to go into super big detail with this next part and all that. If you want to hear more details or refresh your memory on more details about all of that, just go scroll all the way down to my original episode that I did, The OGs of Kaiju Part 1, King Kong, and you can listen to it. But Creation ended up getting canceled, and it ended up becoming King Kong after many, many different changes and things like that, because, you know, originally it was going to be Komodo dragons versus gorillas and all of that kind of stuff. And it ended up becoming King Kong. Really, you know, King Kong is Willis O'Brien's legacy. It's just all it is to it. That's his legacy. Like, Ray Harryhausen has a number of films that are his legacy. 99.9999999% of people, whenever you mention Willis O'Brien, King Kong is the first thing that pops into their mind, you know, as long as they know who Willis O'Brien is. Believe it or not, Willis O'Brien is an Oscar winner. He has one Academy Award under his belt, and I'll get to that later on. But some people kind of unofficially consider him to have two Oscars, because he was told he was going to win the Oscar for King Kong. They were going to give him an Academy Award for it. But Willis O'Brien, being the awesome person that he is, was like, oh, so you're going to give it to the entire special effects team, right? We're all going to get an Oscar, like a little Oscar statue and all that. And they're like, oh, no, you're getting full credit. And he was like, well, I don't want full credit. You know, it wasn't just me. I had lots of people working with me and all of that. Like, you know, I think they should get, if I'm going to win the Oscar, I think they should also get Oscars. And they basically were like, no. It's either you or nothing. So Willis O'Brien said, then it's nothing. And he refused to accept the Oscar because they would not also give credit to his entire team that he worked with. And that's very, very, very admirable, in my opinion. The only bad thing that happened was, according to somebody who used to work with Willis O'Brien, his name was Linwood Dunn, he revealed in a number of private conversations that he had that this very nearly blacklisted Willis O'Brien in Hollywood. And it did so because they were like, it was one of those deals where it's like, oh, Willis O'Brien isn't a team player. He's not going to play by the rules. So then we're not going to use him. Because let's be honest here, Hollywood, that's a different batch of people. You know, those guys, they play by a different set of rules. That's just all it is to it. We all know that. I'm not going to bother getting into the semantics of a lot of the corruption and backwards things that has taken place in Hollywood. But yeah, Willis O'Brien was very nearly blacklisted from Hollywood because of him turning down the Oscar and being deemed not a team player. So, not long after that, you know, because of the success of King Kong, Son of Kong was very much rushed into production, and it had a very, very, very short schedule, and so Willis O'Brien actually, he worked on the film, but he actually let his assistant by the name of Buzz Gibson do most of the animation, and he flat out said he did not want credit for the film. He just didn't. He thought it was cheesy. He didn't like the direction that the film was going. He didn't like that there was a very short schedule, and so he honestly didn't think the film was going to be very well received, and so he was basically like, I don't want my name attached to this. I'll still help, but I don't want my name attached to this. And so that's what ended up happening. Now, it was during this time that he would be working on Son of Kong that his sons would visit the set, William and Willis Jr. And by this time, William is completely blind. And there's been accounts that whenever he would come visit on set, that even though he was blind, they would give him the dinosaur models and let him play with them as if they were toys. And just having a very good time and all of that, you know, his kids would be visiting him on set and all that. It was very good and all of that. Unfortunately, just a couple of weeks after this ended up happening, Hazel, his ex-wife, the mother of the children, she ended up snapping. Because, like I said, she was diagnosed with cancer. She was diagnosed with tuberculosis. And there's possibility of, like, some other mental health issues that were vastly overlooked just because of the time period and all of that. And she shot and murdered the two children, William and Willis Jr. They were both killed. And then she turned the gun on herself and tried to kill herself, but it didn't work. And she actually ended up staying alive for another year, but confined to a hospital bed, and she would end up dying in the following year, 1934. So you can imagine what Willis O'Brien went through with that, you know, already not having the best marriage in the world, divorcing, it essentially turned him into an alcoholic, and then having his two children murdered by his ex-wife, like, you know, it's terrible, terrible tragedy that he went through. I believe it was the same year he ended up marrying his second wife, by the name of Darlene Prinnett, and he would remain with her until his own death and all of that. You know, things did not go well for Willis O'Brien, pretty much after this. Like, bad luck, stolen ideas, the studios not taking him seriously. Like, he just had a very bad, like, end of his career, and it's terrible. Worked on a number of films that would end up, you know, again, he would make pitches, and sometimes they would be greenlit and then get canceled later on, or they would just flat out get rejected. He would work on other films, just like before, do a little bit of animation, some storyboards and stuff like that, and then all of a sudden it's like, nope. Changed our mind, we're not doing it. In 1942, he came up with the concept of cowboys encountering a dinosaur in a lost valley. Does that sound familiar to you? The title of the film was going to be Guanji. It would end up becoming The Valley of Guanji, done by Ray Harryhausen. Ray Harryhausen would do this film in honor of Willis O'Brien, because Willis tried numerous times to get the film off the ground, and it kept getting rejected and all of that, and so Ray Harryhausen would end up doing the film in honor of him. So that's why we ended up getting the film The Valley of Guanji from Ray Harryhausen. Not long after that, he worked on Mighty Joe Young. This is very much towards the end of his career. He had lost a lot of his desire, a lot of his gung-ho to do a lot of things. He did end up winning an Oscar for Mighty Joe Young, though it is widely speculated that he let Ray Harryhausen, as well as another assistant, handle the vast majority of the animation for this film. And, you know, you could take or leave that however you want it, to where it's like, well, if he didn't do the majority of the animation, you know, he shouldn't have accepted the Oscar and all that. But, you know, with everything that he's gone through, I guess maybe it was one of those deals of like, you know, I deserve this. Or maybe he felt terrible. Like, man, I really should have accepted the Oscar for King Kong back in the day. You know, he needed a win at this point. And so, yeah, to me, in my own personal mind, it is kind of wrong that he let other individuals do the vast majority of the work for Mighty Joe Young, and then he accepted the Oscar. But, you know, it is what it is. You can't change what happened. And he did need a win at that point. And continuing on from there, he did struggle to find work. He came up with the concept of a boy and a bull trying to fight off a dinosaur from their village called Valley of the Mist. There was another film. I'm sorry. Yeah, Valley of the Mist would have had O'Brien and Harryhausen working together. It ended up falling through. There for a while, he had talked about doing a remake of King Kong because of there just being newer technology and all of that. They were going to legit do just a full-fledged remake of the film. That also fell through. He ended up doing a nature documentary called The Animal World in 1956. And then there was a film called The Beast of Hollow Mountain. I own the film. I have yet to see it. He actually didn't do any of the credit or any of the animation for this film, but it was kind of a combination of his idea for The Valley of Guanji as well as the idea of The Valley of the Mist. He did end up doing a film called Black Scorpion. Again, I own and will cover eventually in 1957. And then he did a film that I did cover on the podcast already, The Giant Behemoth, that was released in 1959. One of the most infamous things, and again, I'm not going to go into detail with this because I did talk about it a lot in whenever I actually did an episode on this film, is that he wanted to do a film called King Kong versus Frankenstein, going as far as to doing storyboards and sketches and art for it, pitching it around to various studios and all of that kind of stuff. But once it was found out that he didn't have the copyrights to King Kong or Frankenstein, the idea was stolen from him, given to Toho Studios, and it ended up becoming King Kong vs. Godzilla in 1962. And again, Willis O'Brien received no credit for even coming up with the idea of the versus scenario involving King Kong and Frankenstein that would end up becoming King Kong versus Godzilla, which would in turn spark the whole versus scenario thing in Godzilla films. And the last little bit of work that he did do on a film was called It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, in which he did some stop-motion animation of some individuals hanging from a high distance. And like I said, and then he passed away in 1962. And then it would be in 1969 that Ray Harryhausen would do The Valley of Guanji in honor of his friend and mentor, Willis O'Brien. So, all right, guys, that pretty much does it for my spotlight on Willis O'Brien. It's a very sad story. He had a lot of tragedy in his life. He had a lot of bad luck in his life. But we can remember him. We can honor him, and we can honor his legacy by everything that he did, giving him credit that he deserves on certain films and all of that. And, you know, one concept, I can't remember the title of it, one concept I really would have loved to have seen was that Willis O'Brien and Marion C. Cooper, I believe, were working on an idea in which it would have taken place in, you know, the ancient times and like medieval Europe. And it would have involved Vikings flying around on like pterodactyls and using dinosaurs as like their steeds and stuff like that. I think that that would have been a pretty cool concept. And hopefully somebody will catch that idea one day and be like, hey, let's turn this into a movie in honor of Willis O'Brien. I would very much enjoy that. So, alrighty, guys. Next week, a week from today, I will be returning to a very loved franchise amongst the fans. I'm going to be doing the second film in a trilogy called The Return of Daimajin. Hope you guys are looking forward to that. I very much enjoyed the original Daimajin film. Hopefully, I'll be able to find plenty of stuff to talk about with the second film. Even though I pretty much already know there's a lot of, it's going to be difficult. There's not a whole lot of production stuff out there known on the production of The Return of Daimajin. But yeah, a week from today, next Saturday, I will be doing The Return of Daimajin. Check me out on all of my social medias. On Facebook, I'm Kaiju Carnage, Godzilla / King Kong Podcast, and I have a Godzilla Ultima fan page. And on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, I am Cal, the Kaiju Guy. So, all right, guys. Let's always give Willis O'Brien the credit that he deserves. Check out some of his films. You know, he deserves it. He really, really does with a lot of the stuff that he went through and everything. So let's never forget his contributions to the movie industry and all that. In a lot of ways, movies would not be what they are today if it was not for him. So again, if you're an artist and you're interested in working on this project with me for the new logo, just reach out to me on any of my social medias, and we'll see what we can do. We'll work something out. So, alrighty, guys, thank you all once again. You guys are the best. I wouldn't be doing this without you. Love and appreciate every single one of you. So again, next week, be doing The Return of Daimajin. This was the Willis O'Brien Spotlight. I'm Cal the Kaiju Guy, signing out.